for January the 12th, 2018, we talk about some crazy VR stuff from CES, Human Fall Flat, and we ask you about your gaming relationships. Welcome to Level 226. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Rocking it three style again. Today, Dennis is out traveling. David is getting settled out on the West Coast and is having internet problems. But I'm very happy to have the two of you here. Hi.
Yeah. I think this might be the rarest combination, maybe.
This is the time where the Texans outnumber the other people.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Dude, we're taking over.
I'm just a seat from the podcast.
Oh, God. Yeah. That's so lonely. Yeah. Oh, well. If you're going to do it, now's the chance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the rarest. I just need to go and do this. But there's a lot of data that I don't have in the spreadsheet yet. So, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Side note. Yeah. All you need to do to stop Texans from seceding is just make it snow where they are, or just throw ice at them.
Right.
Yeah.
Let me test this theory. Is your idea that it only doesn't snow in Texas because they're part of the U.S.?
My theory is people freak out when it gets to 30 degrees or below or in Texas.
Okay.
They totally do. I can attest to that. I mean, I personally don't freak out because although I have only seen snow like maybe two or three times in my entire life, my parents are from up north. Well, not my dad's from Havana, Cuba, but he emigrated to Nebraska. So, and it's been I think a week ago it was minus 15 there. And my mom's from Minnesota. So, I'm accustomed from hearsay from the family and tips and tricks and all that other wonderful stuff from the people who lived up north.
Yeah. So you've got the institutional knowledge to deal with it.
Yeah, and so I am unfazed, and also I laugh at everybody else for freaking out about the ice. Yeah. So, I freak out more about the people who don't know how to drive in it and having to be on the roads with them. That is what I freak out about because they don't, since it doesn't freeze over very often here, they don't know how to handle it insofar as salting the roads and how to drive on it, and they don't have the right tires to whatever, so
yeah,
that's the scary part, is getting on the road when it's cold.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and that's the case pretty much everywhere. Oh, well, I mean, so I don't know how to segue into show business kind of stuff.
I will talk about show business. Woo. I started belly dancing again. I took a 6-month break last June when I had my biopsy related to the cancer that I had my surgery for last summer. And I just couldn't emotionally handle being in class and trying to smile and shimmy and shit when I was not feeling it. But I'm back now and I'm doing double classes back to back right at the moment. So I'm not just there. I'm there in full force.
Trying to make up lost ground.
Yeah. And then also I've got a running expo 5K and then the Houston Marathon this weekend. So, that's what I'm doing. Lots of physical activities. So I'm being busy, and it's supposed to be I want to say they're saying something between 30 and 40 degrees for the marathon, which for everybody up north, you will laugh. Everybody down here is freaking out about what they're going to wear to this marathon.
So I'm sure you don't want it to be 110 degrees when you're running a marathon. That just compounds things, right? At what point does the human body start suffering adverse effects while running in that kind of weather, outside of I'm just not used to this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Last winter, quote unquote winter, it only got cold for 2 days. And then it was it was 15 degrees here for 2 days. And there was black ice and everything on the roads. It was crazy. But then after that, there was it was just balmy. And so the marathon temperatures last year, I forget what they were, but it was pretty warm. And a lot of people overheated And, you know, not people from here, but the people who came in from, you know, up north to run this marathon,
right,
you know, that overheated because they're not used to our temperatures and our humidity. And there were people who were hospitalized, and it was pretty crazy. For me, I was accustomed to it. So, I mean, like, it slowed me down to be running in the heat, but I didn't, you know, have any cramping or, you know, heat related problems. But cold, yeah, I cold is indicative that a lot of people are going to be running a very fast marathon, because when it's that cold, you can manage your, you know, regulate your temperature a little bit better, and so a lot of people won't have the muscle cramps, and they'll feel better running and everything. I'm not racing it because I have plantar fasciitis right now. And yeah, also I had a very crazy season between Hurricane Harvey and you know, cancer and various other crazy things, you know, like family in the hospital and things. So, like, I did not do, like, I trained, I can do the distance, but I mm-hmm. did not do any speed work. So I'm just running it to run it, and I'm going to have fun doing it. And that's what I'm doing for this one. But, yeah, so I'll be doing that this weekend. When everybody else is listening to this, I will be out there running. So
running very far.
Yeah. Long ways. So,
yeah.
That's what I'm up to, what I've been up to, what I will be up to.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I don't have anything that I can even talk about. It's just been a bunch of work and just time disappearing. Ben?
I had a pretty uneventful weekend. I have a lot going on this coming week, so maybe I'll talk about that. I'm seeing The Phantom Thread this Thursday night, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's next movie, so I'm excited about that. And then I'm playing a game of Twilight Imperium, which I mentioned like a week or two ago, with friends on Sunday, so I'm really excited about that.
Really?
You have transplanted that is now around, or did you play that in Texas last time?
Last time I played in Cincinnati when I came to visit for okay. winter break. Okay. But I've conned enough people into trying it out this coming week, so.
into sacrificing a day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, cool. Yeah, there's no real business to attend to at the top here, aside from thanking people for listening. And this is going to be a regular kind of episode. We're going to do the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Jala, your story seems to be it seems to follow from what we were recently talking about here. So I'm going to throw you in first.
Okay, throw me into the fire. I have a couple of stories about some VR stuff that is coming out during next week's CES, Computer Electronics, show, expo, whatever. So the Tesla suit is something that simulates being touched in VR. It's a full body suit that you wear in addition to your little headset thing, and it gives you simulations of pain, pressure, gun recoil, basically with electrical impulses. Think of like a TENS unit, except it's all over your body. So like if you have a body shot during some kind of shooting game, you have a jolt to your, you know, stomach or wherever you got hit. Oh. And when you are shooting a gun, it recoils, like your hand jerks because of the electrical impulses. And the guy that was testing it in the article that I found was playing a zombie shooter. So he was kind of like freaking out because he was feeling the stuff like, you know, like he wasn't feeling pain. Like he said it was just like startling to just feel the sensations when he's playing the game.
Right.
And yeah, so it apparently also tracks motion. So they're hoping to see it replace controllers for the most part.
Right.
So that's cool. And they're making the suit washable with chemical dry cleaning capacity.
God, I hope so.
On the spot as well. So, like, you know, if you want to spot clean it, you can use, like, a chemical dry cleaning substance for it as well. Yeah. That's one story, which I thought that was kind of cool. That's the most directly game-related part of it.
Does it come with, like a mini-fridge-sized autoclave so you can defunkify it?
Right? I mean, it should. So
well, that's cool. It's like full body haptics. Yeah.
And so that's going to be shown next week at the CES. And then another thing being shown at the CES, there is a group that is called Black Box VR, and they have developed a full body workout using a bespoke resistance training machine and a Vive. And okay. The setup is about the size of a bathroom. I've seen something like this at PAX South. There was an Endless Runner game that used like a treadmill or an elliptical, or I don't remember what it was. And you, the, like the faster you would go, then the faster your character would go in the game. And anyway, like with this thing, this full body workout setup, they want to develop an at-home version later on down the road. But the idea is to keep people from dropping their adherence to fitness stuff via gamification.
By trapping them in a virtual prism.
Yeah, it, like I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. Like, but eventually they want to allow users to compete against each other. But basically, like the lady who playtested it, who writes for the BBC, had said that like when she put on the headset, she had like a cheering crowd, and then she had like some guy in front of her that she had to do like, I don't know, chest presses or something to outdo the chest presses or something. So it reminds me of those like arm wrestling games that were in the arcades a long time ago.
Oh,
except
yeah.
Like actually VR, and actually you're physically really doing, you know, like an actual workout on a machine. So, but anyway, like that was just a sample.
I'm so exercise illiterate that when you said when you said chest presses, I didn't think of that as like a, you know, like a weightlifting exercise. What I pictured was chest compressions. And when you said people cheering, I was like, wait a minute, like arena based competitive CPR VR.
No, that was not it.
Anyway. We can fast track this later, Cole.
Okay.
I'm in.
Well, all right. Anyway, moving right along. The controllers strap onto your forearms so that users can grab gym equipment. And like one of the playtesters in the article apparently dropped 82 pounds playing the games and then adjusting his diet. And he said that he had had trouble with adherence before, but because he's a gamer and, you know, like this has a lot of gaming elements to it, even though it is still a workout, it has enough to it that he doesn't get bored doing it.
Yeah.
Of course, the concern other than this eventual at-home version would be, you know, the setup cost and stress testing the Vive for that kind of a use, because the Vive, you know, was not necessarily intended for that kind of intense physical activity, and
right.
What people's reactions will be kind of in question. But I didn't know this before, but I've been educated since, that there is a VR Health Institute, and it's developing a PEGI style rating system for fitness games according to their activity level. So that's a thing that's in process right now. So it's going to be, you know, like a thing. Last year's CES also had a cradle that simulated flight over a mountain range that, like, you would fly over the mountain range so long as you were planking.
Bring it back.
So that's interesting. And also at this event this year, a Czech startup called Sense Arena is promoting VR for the use of training athletes for ice hockey, basketball, and football, saying that it could lead to fewer injuries during matches and things. And also, I did not know this, but Go Ohio in Columbus, they apparently have a VR gym where you can train with a VR personal trainer for $60 per session. So essentially, for the same cost as a real life person, you can have a fake one.
Okay, cool.
Or you can go to California to get a fake one.
So
go Columbus, Ohio.
I suppose. They need something. Yeah. So I would almost think there would be like a safety concern too, because like if you're doing anything with like any kind of appreciable resistance, like that has a chance to kind of fuck you up, right?
It does. If you are scaled up too fast too soon, like if you go from zero to I'm gonna bench press 200 pounds, well, I mean, like you're gonna fuck up something, you
right?
Know?
Right.
Like, you know, you have to scale it accordingly. So there would have to, there should be at least, speaking as somebody who used to be a fitness instructor and who is studying to be a fitness instructor again, there should be some kind of a fitness test before you start a game that calibrates like where you are and starts you off at like the appropriate level, because otherwise people, especially if they're super competitive, they might just be like, oh, I can do more. Or they might play too much, you know, and then overdo it and then get chronic injury from stress of, you know, too much play. that kind of a thing. So, like, those are things where there would have to be some kind of system or, you know, whatever in place in the game itself for those kinds of concerns, you know.
A lot of voice similar concerns about the shock suit. Like, how are they going to put thresholds on that so it doesn't hurt somebody?
Yeah, yeah. And there's that, too. So I don't know what the equivalent intensity is and how that compares to something like a TENS unit or anything. The only thing I found about it so far was just the one video article talking about it coming out and, you know, being a thing that you can try out at the show next week. So I don't know. Hopefully after the show, there will be more information out there about that so we can see just how shocking it really is. And all of them. But
yeah. This is cool. So, if it helps people.
So, yeah, for sure. I mean, if it helps people and it keeps them interested in doing the thing, I'm all about it. As a matter of fact, this is a bit of an aside. In the wellness channel on the Slack, I am currently talking about developing, like, it started out as Jala is going to make a challenge for everybody to do for the month of February. Uh-huh. And then now it's turned into, hey, how about I make it like a skill tree and, like, you can go progress down different paths so that way the people who don't want to do cardio can just focus on strength training or whatever. Yeah. Then, like, you can unlock skills, and then ooh, we could have a boss that could be like the you know, super review challenge at the end of the month, and you know, trying to figure out how you get XP for this, like essentially turning it into an RPG. So I'm in the middle of messing with that to make like a challenge for people in the Slack. So you know, gamification of fitness is a thing that I literally am doing right now. So
yeah,
hence my interest.
Yeah. I'm all on board for gamification of fitness. Not so much, you know, consuming or work or things like that.
Yeah.
Neat. I've got a story, and this is a little bit. It's really just like an FYI or a neat little factoid or whatever. In the roughly, let me see here. 4.5, 5 years, yeah, let's say 4 years, that the Wii U was out in Japan. Okay, so Wii U, Nintendo's previous system, it sold 3.3 million units, which is not great. And illustrating how not great that is, in less than a year, the Switch has outsold the Wii U in Japan, mind you, at you know, to a tune of 3.4 million. I have no factual basis in which to kind of like make this assumption, you know, or a conclusion, but I would say Japan is representative, let's say, of demand for the Wii U and probably even exceeds what it is. So it wouldn't be that hard of a sell to say, oh, this means it's outsold the Wii U everywhere, cementing the Wii U as Nintendo's Dreamcast that they survived. Which okay, I don't mean to be harsh. I like my Wii U a lot. It's just,
I liked my Dreamcast too.
Yeah, I love my Dreamcast.
Do we have a news story like 5 years ago when the Wii U came out where it's like, yeah, Nintendo was after the Wii sales, like they could do this like 50 more years and they would still be fine. Something crazy like that.
Yeah, I have no idea what their cash reserves are. Like there were like rumblings and stuff saying it's not as good as like just they were in worse shape than people thought. Mm-hmm. So I found this article on Destructoid is where I found it. Normally we don't mention the source, but it's important for me to say this because I'm going to talk about a comment. The first comment that's available here is a GIF from The Simpsons where that little kid is screaming, stop, he's already dead. You know, after somebody gets a massive beating. You know, it's the same company. So it's hard to be like, oh, hey, my guy did it. This isn't like a weird tribalism kind of thing. It literally is just like, oh, the Switch is A, that popular, and B, you know, the Wii U was no great shakes, and this is kind of confirmation of that.
Surprising no one.
Yep. So to call that news is a little bit of a stretch.
Okay, sorry. I wasn't trying to take a shit on your story. I'm just like, yeah, that's, yeah, I want a Switch and I never wanted a Wii U. So yeah. Yes.
There you go. It passed the personal test. Yeah. And Ben, you have a story that's a little bit sales related as well.
Yeah, it's similar to the story I did a week or two ago about Amazon sales. PlayStation released their sales for 2017 of the most downloaded games that they've had for the year. Not a lot of like major surprises on it. Some of the interesting things is games that are kind of old now are still like on the list and charting. So like Grand Theft Auto 5 came in at number 5, Rocket League came on at number 7, Minecraft the PS4 edition came in at number 8. So those are still selling. So that's kind of saying that, like, I don't know, maybe PlayStation doesn't have as many like unique titles as like Nintendo Switch did. Like, because mm-hmm. that was one of the last article is like a lot of the high selling games for Amazon were Switch exclusives. Uh-huh. And then the one of note is Friday the 13th came in at number 3 for the PlayStation sales for the year.
That's crazy. That's good. Yeah. Like, that's good. I just wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah. Yeah, other than that, it's a bunch of generic games, Call of Duty World War II, Destiny 2, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, NBA. Like the like big hot sellers.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff you would see performing well elsewhere.
Yeah, whatever, yeah. That Horizon Zero Dawn that you can pass that off as a whatever game only because the people who are very bad that aren't here.
Yeah.
that was Matt's for me, but yeah, other people like that one a lot more, so maybe I should not gloss over that so casually.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does seem, I guess, in comparison to like the Amazon sales, it does seem that PlayStation does. It highlights that they have not had as good of a year as Nintendo, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah. Well, cool. Go Friday the 13th. That's amazing.
What's funny is I was just talking with some people in the Slack today about Damned. Remember when I was playing that game like a year ago? And it's like something that people are like, hey, that sounds a lot like the Friday the 13th game. I'm like, yeah, except it's like, you know, you can play one of 5 different monsters and it's like, you know, a little bit of a different experience. And mm-hmm. it's also an indie game versus, you know, Friday the 13th. I'm pretty sure Friday the 13th is way more polished, but yeah, people need to play that game with me.
Damned?
Damned! Yeah. I want to be damned with everybody. It makes me happy.
Yeah. I think Friday the 13th, that's indie as well. That was kickstarted.
Oh, is it? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean,
it still looks more polished than the other one because it's probably got a bigger team or whatever.
Yeah.
But
it still definitely has some technical hiccups, but yeah, they sold out.
I also want to play that one, but Damned has like 5 different types of monsters that all have different ways of moving and different like visual effects and everything. So it's super kind of cool that way because you don't know who's going to be what.
Yeah.
And how they're going to come at you. So, or if you might be the monster, what you're going to be having to deal with. So pretty cool.
Man.
But anyway, yeah, not to take away from Friday the 13th, I'm sure that is also very awesome. I did see a little bit of you playing that, Ben, and it looked cool.
Yeah.
Hunt everybody and kill them all. It sounds like fun.
And also playing Friday the 13th.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, what's the question that you asked the nice people?
I came up with it all on my own! Yay! Okay. Have you formed any lasting relationships through gaming? And tell us your favorite story of friendship and or love. Mm. Love and peace. Yeah. That's like a joke for 2 people. That's all right.
That's fine. Is that from co-op stuff?
No. That's reference to an old anime series.
Ah.
Trigun.
I gotcha.
Anyway.
I know I know that one. I mean, I know of it. Let's see here. Greg writes, I didn't encounter Jala directly due to gaming, but it didn't take long for her to suggest doing Portal 2 co-op with me when she found out that I hadn't played it. Since then, we have gamed quite a lot, and it's helped develop our friendship. Plus, she introduced me to her group of friends through that, such as Sam and Briar. And it's been great looking forward to MP sessions, multiplayer sessions, and getting me more social online.
Although technically I met Greg because of Ollie, who is another listener of the show.
Yeah.
And Ollie was like, hey, Greg, he's a good guy and he wants to chat, but he doesn't want to like, you know, seem like a creepy person coming up to you randomly.
Right.
So I talked to him and I was like, okay, fine. Hi, Greg. What's up? And that's how it happened. So it still happened because of the podcast, which is about video games. So we still met because of video games.
That still works. Yeah. Ben, what does John say?
Sean says, I met a lot of my close friends through fighting games, especially once I started playing Guilty Gear. My friend Steve has become both my rival in fighting games as well as one of my closest friends. Aw.
I wonder how much of that was that like in the arcade? I wonder how one would meet somebody through fighting games nowadays.
It is mystery.
I don't know.
John will have to explain.
Yeah. Respond to your message. I'd be curious about that. Mostly because I miss arcades. Jala, what does Sam say?
Sam says, basically, my answer is the same as Greg's, including being the same people, since everyone I used to play games with as a younger person either dropped out of gaming or is someone I no longer associate with. I'd just also like to thank the Level and Duckfeed community in general for finally giving me a place to sublimate my obsessive need to talk about video games.
Hmm.
Right on.
Sublimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good word. I was happy that he used that word.
Hooray for Sam's vocabulary.
Yeah.
Also hooray for things. Yeah, like when I asked this question, I was just thinking about this because there's a long rabbit hole about where this question came from, but then I was like, oh, I realized that some of the people that I game with like every week are gonna reply to this and they're gonna say it's me, like, and that sounds like I'm trying to stoke my own ego, but I'm totally like, that was not where I was going with this.
Yeah, it looks like this this wave will pass. Those were the first people who responded. Yeah. Jonathan writes, it all started with Halo before I even had an Xbox. I had a profile and I left it at a friend's house on the memory card. They used me as a save point. I still play games with them now. Listening to one playing Persona 5 on the phone as I type this, laughing my ass off. Oh, that's what they're doing right now as we're typing it. Good friends, great times. Yeah,
awesome.
For people of a certain age, Halo is probably a huge icebreaker. Mm-hmm. And a huge bonding experience. No, it was for me. I came out when I was like in eighth grade and continued to be like a going thing all throughout high school. Are you laughing at how young I am?
No.
Okay.
Are you sensitive about your age, Cole?
No. No. I know. Ben, what does Jason say?
Jason says, gaming is one of the things my wife and I had in common that helped bring us together. We still play and enjoy games together. I've also met a lot of good people online through games, including this community. Special shout out to my duck bro, Michael Prend.
And I assume they play a Warframe.
Yeah, probably a Warframe.
Is duck bro now a thing?
I hope not. Is it?
Oh.
as long as bro is meant strictly in the camaraderie sense, I don't like the idea of
I call people duck peeps a lot, but I call them duck peeps. I don't say duck sis or duck bro.
Yeah. I'm not gonna take it away from people if they like it. I don't want toxic masculinity associated with what we do here. And for duck some friend. Reason, yeah, duck pal.
You're so duck full pal. Of toxic I like duck masculinity. Pal.
Okay. Yeah. But being so alpha, Cole.
Okay. Yeah. let's see here. Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, I kind of owe my marriage to JRPGs. Mm. When my wife and I first got together, that summer basically consisted of playing Final Fantasy X, woo, Dark Cloud, and Paper Mario. Woo. She even watched a bit of me playing Metal Gear Solid 2, but that didn't last because, let's face it, that game is pretty dumb even for a video game.
Yeah, spectating on that might be a bit of a problem because it does turn into kind of a shitty movie.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah, man, I need to they brought out Dark Cloud 2 on the PS4 as a PS2 classic. I need to go and play that, but like I'm constantly on the verge of like, but that might be a WoF game sometime, and I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
But that's a very nice story, Mike. Thank you. Let's see. John writes, obvious answer here, but I've become friends with many denizens of the Duckfeed Network Slack channel. It has been very fulfilling since my IRL friends are not interested in the games that I am. And again, this has also become ego-stroking for the network as a whole. Oh, no.
Well, you know what? I don't even know anybody. Like, okay, I take that back. Some of the art people I know also like video games. Most of the rest of the people I know in real life do not like video games. They have nothing to do with them whatsoever. So, like, only some of my art people have any crossover, and I don't think they play the stuff I play. So.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't want to, like, up to or beyond a certain point, you really don't want to inflict interest violence on somebody. Just describing a video game to somebody who's not down for it, it's kind of like telling them about a dream you had.
I do that all the time. I need to watch that then.
Oh, about dreams you had?
Yeah.
Oh, if they're down for it, that's fine. I'm just like, just if you inflict it on a stranger. Yeah.
I need to use that as like dude repellent when guys are being creepy. If that's going to be like a thing that works, totally use it.
Right. But it might attract creepier guys.
That's true.
Let's see. That was who read that one? It was like 2 seconds ago.
You read John.
I read John. Okay. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, laid back or mindless multiplayer games kind of replace social media and TV in my life, allowing me to reach out and stay in touch with people. More acutely, Bloodborne led me to Bonfireside Chat and in turn to the wonderful DuckFeed community. Once again, self-congratulating question. Next week's question will be, what's the nicest thing you can say to us?
Yeah.
Michael goes on to say, my life's been brightened a lot ever since. Nice.
I'm sorry for ever making up a question on my
own. No.
No, we're not. We're not throwing.
You were not intending to do that.
No.
I wasn't.
I believe you. That didn't cross my mind at all.
I'll tell the story about why I came up with the question when we get to me.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Lindsay says Dark Souls allowed me to make 3 awesome friends from around the world, one from Poland, one from Canada, and one from the US. We talk on almost a daily basis, helping each other in games and our own lives. I wouldn't be the same without the Souls community, as crazy as they can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I've met a lot of people through Souls stuff, like, through just happening to be associated with Bonfireside Chat. So I dig it. I know it. Poland, that's great, making friends around the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris writes, games are a tool that friends and I have used as a way to keep in touch outside of a private Slack. We've mostly enjoyed doing comp stomps. I think that's playing with your friends against a computer. But has also been great for establishing a team when playing more competitive games like Counter-Strike Go, HOTS, Heroes of the Storm, Rainbow Six Siege, and so on. It's kept my gaming group somewhat small. I've never been comfortable playing with strangers, but through vetting, we have had a few new people join the group, which developed into real friendships. Along with just being friends for gaming, we've been there for each other when crappy life events happen. Cancer, conception issues, depression, job loss, etc. Yep. Also a very nice story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then finally, Ben, what does Adam say?
Adam says, I've made friends through playing Warhammer 40K at the local game store. I play with the Drukhari. They are the dark elf space pirates who love to fight and torture, kind of like the Reavers and Firefly.
Okay.
They operate like a glass cannon, though. So my favorite story is when they had an infantry-only tournament where my army shines because I can bring in a lot of units. Most of the other players went with less units that were more powerful. I won most of my games that day, overwhelming most players with my numbers, and all my games went long. The Tyranid player also brought in lots of units, and I fought him last, and that game was extra long given the number of units in play. I came close to winning that game, too, but have a couple of unlucky lucky dice rolls when it mattered.
Yes, a battle well fought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a whole scene I have no insight into, outside of those little glimpses that happen like that just there.
I've started to pick up on this more because I've started playing Magic on Friday nights, and that's like a big like social event. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a lot of crossover with people who play Magic and then also play Warhammer. So sometimes you see some of that.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Cool.
Well, thank you everybody for writing in. Let's do ours. Jala, you had a story behind this, so I'll throw it your way.
Well, okay. So, you know, I do my fitness thing and I go running and things. Well, I went to my running group's end of season party and then I noticed that all of these spouses for these people, either there were a chunk of them that one of the people in the relationship would be a runner. And then the other one ended up getting dragged into it and started running as a result of their spouse and, you know, doing the same thing and you know, getting to know everybody and all that. And then I also encountered that there were a lot of these people that I know and I run with, and their spouse was just like totally unsupportive, not there at all for any of it. You know, like one dude was at the bar watching football and I didn't even get to meet him. And he's like the spouse of one of the people I run with every week. And then another person that I run with, his wife was super pissed off and was just like messing with her phone. And like, you know, he ended up not being able to talk to anybody because he was trying to placate her and stuff. And then they ended up leaving early. And I don't know, everybody was just, there was like some people with some drama. And I was just talking to some people in the Slack about, wow, like, does that work for people? I mean, like, mm-hmm. I know it does work for people where you don't have the similar interests or whatever, but I'm the type of person that like, I tend to do a lot of stuff with people that I care about, and like the people who get closest to me always share a lot of common interests, and if they don't, then they might be good friends, but they're like still out there a little bit, you know, like they don't get as close to me as the people who share commonalities. So when I was thinking about this as it relates to gaming, I'm like, you know, every single guy I've ever dated has been a gamer. Most of them I have met in some oblique way because of gaming, either because of tabletop RPGs or freeform role playing online or video games in some way. Like even the people that I met in person, I met one guy that at work, and he noticed that I had a Stars patch on my jacket. So we started talking about Resident Evil, and that's how we bonded. Mm-hmm. And that's how we ended up like hitting it off, was talking about Resident Evil. And then, you know, another guy was the roommate of a friend of mine that I got to know online playing Guild Wars 2. And I met him in person first at like the Renaissance Festival, but like, you know, it's only because of this other guy that I knew that I met because of games. And also he was a gamer too. So like, you know, yeah. And I have way, way too many stories of spending time and making friends with people online, you know, playing games together, because I mean, I always have Jala's co-op corner, you know, like I'm always playing games with people. That's kind of like my social time, sort of like how Michael Prenn said,
right.
You know, where it's like replaced other forms of social time. So you know, like that's a thing. So anyway, like it was this whole big, you know, larger conversation that I was having with some people in like the Slack about just like friendships and being close to people, like any kind of relationship, not necessarily like romantic or whatever, but like, you know, just being close to people and how that relates to your interests.
And do you need that that common ground as a basis for even just conversation?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I can carry on conversation and get along well with people of various interests. However, like, the people who get the closest to me, at least me personally, yes, I do need to have that kind of common ground. And, like, if you don't, you don't have to necessarily do all the same things I do, but, like, you have to have some baseline interest in it.
Or not be, like, totally dismissive of it.
And that's, it was very disheartening to me to see these people that I care about, that I run with, having, you know, these relationships where like these people were just like not even there, you know.
Yeah,
I'm like, why did you show up? It would have been better to just not come, you know, than be pissy, you know.
I'm going to support you by coming with you and being angry the entire time.
Like, no, what is that? That makes me sad.
You can mark time by my size. That will happen every 3.5 minutes starting
So anyway, that's how that question came about. Something else entirely. But I remember that one time that we played Trine together, Cole.
Yeah.
We played Trine, and then we also played, and then I beat your butt with Big Boo, King Boo, that one time.
Oh yeah, at the Mario Kart. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played a game with you, have I?
Remember that one time we played Rocket League?
Oh, that one time. It was only one time.
We played it one time.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my story is one that's probably like told like a million times about like the genesis of the show or whatever, but video games were a great way to kind of break the ice and bond with the people on the show, Ben, David, and Dennis, you know? Like I already knew David, like, you know, but I've known him since small times, but no, like going into the dorm and playing Resident Evil 4 and Shadow of the Colossus, passing stuff around. That was a great way to spend the time and, you know, get comfortable with each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Along the same lines of breaking the ice, playing video games together led us to icing you for your birthday when we were playing Rock Band.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my stomach just turned over.
So sorry. I think for the most part, most of the time I play games are kind of like to reinforce relationships that I already have. So like we played Halo with like high school friends that we had in college. We'd play games together. And like now I play games with a lot of coworkers. Like I play Rocket League with a lot of coworkers. So, but yeah.
Yeah, one of my unfortunate problems is that at least with my running group, I'm on the younger side of things, and I'm also one of the people who doesn't have kids. And so, like, what happens is I run with a dude, and he's like, oh, you play video games too? My kids play video games. And then he's talking about stuff that he bought them for Christmas, and I know more about what's going on than he does. And I probably have more to talk about, really talk about with his kid more than him. That's kind of like the weird thing. You know,
that's me with my coworkers, actually.
Yeah,
which is fine. Yes. Like, I'm happy about that. But
yeah, I mean, like, that's fine. That just means that I can be like the insight when they want to know something about the thing, you know, so that they can relate to their children better. But yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, so- well, thank you, everybody, for responding. If you want to take part, those go up Tuesday afternoons. Thanks to Jala and Dennis. And you can find them at the prompts at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I'm going to throw to you first.
Okay, so riding off of that multiplayer question, first things up is Co-op Corner. So I did Vermintide DLC with Greg, Breyer, and Sam. Two of those people answered the multiplayer. I didn't mean for that. Okay, whatever. So Vermintide DLC. There were some very good variety in the five maps that we played, but unfortunately there wasn't a lot of ammo the first session, and I was the Waywatcher, who is the archer character. So I was really struggling like the first session through, and was more often kind of in a support role, picking people up and providing backup more than I was like actually doing anything. And also all of my roles to get new equipment have been shitty, so I haven't gotten any better equipment. So like Briar just got a really good weapon for their character, and as a result, like, Briar's been, you know, the top person on every category at the end of every one of these, you know, maps. So anyway, some of the different maps that we came across, there was a dark dungeon where you have a torch and you literally can't see anything beyond the ring of light. And there's traps. And basically, like, you can kind of see enemies because you can see their glowing red eyes. But that's about it. Like, you don't know, you know, their exact positioning or what type of enemy it is, for example. Like, you don't know if it's a storm vermin who has a lot of armor or if it's a regular guy. You have no idea unless you draw them into the light. And so that was cool. There were some outdoor areas with mountains that were very picturesque and cool and looked, you know, really unique and interesting. There were ship battles with some kind of crazy Mad Max looking steamboats and rat hordes boarding, you know, like latching onto the side of the boat and boarding the ship. In that particular part, my speed was useful in breaking the chains to keep the rat boats, you know, back. But the guys had to try to protect me, and so like we got overwhelmed the first time around, and then, you know, we kind of got the system down, and then the second time we played it, you know, we passed through that. There was another part where there were you know, snow-covered mountains and snow-colored rats springing out of the snow. Jeez. Did I mention snow?
Yeah, so, you did.
So Greg and Briar are both in New England, and so they're like, yeah, it kind of looks like where I live right now, you know. And another one of the maps was a dwarven city, which was also really cool. So I mean, I was really impressed with the environments and the new areas, and they gave us some new things to do. So it, you know, like, not just like some of the maps in the original game started to feel a little bit redundant, like, okay, this is just a palette swap of this other one that I just did, you know. But this one, each one of the maps felt like a different experience.
Yeah, this is a lot more variety than I expected the game to have. I expected it kind of just to be dark Victorian alleyways.
Yeah, and no, it actually had a lot of different areas and a lot of different stuff happening, which was cool and very memorable, very neat. So I enjoy what we have played so far of the DLC, according to Greg, because I did not buy the DLC. But the cool thing about the DLC for this game is that if one person buys it, then everybody can play it.
Oh, nice. So only one participant in a team has to.
Yeah. And actually, I think more than one of them has it. But either way, I didn't buy it, so I can't take a look at the map. But Greg says that there's more maps to go. So we will probably continue with that. Not this coming weekend because I'll be running, but the weekend after that. So very cool. It makes me look forward more to Vermintide 2, which I won't play until we finish the DLC.
Is that out? Is that a thing?
I don't remember if it's out or if it's in beta. I know it's like in some version of development where you can actually take a look at it, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
I knew at one point, but I've slept. So. Okay, so that's that. I don't really have anything else to say about it. It's the same game, just with new stuff, new maps and visuals and stuff, and it was
cool.
Fun to jump back into. Next thing.
Oh, I was going to say one thing. Steam says Vermintide 2 is coming out Q1 2018.
Okay, so it's like sometime soon. It must have been in beta when people were talking about it or something. Okay, cool. Thank you, Ben. So the next thing is I finished Corpse Party Book of Shadows.
Yeah.
So now I get to tell you my actual official opinion. So eventually I got used to the vignette style and the fact that there isn't really any overarching pace between the chapters. So that stopped bothering me. Basically, however, the only connective tissue between this game and then the next game, like the last game in the series, Corpse Party Blood Drive, is the final vignette, and it ends on a really dramatic cliffhanger.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so there's that. And then also, I do have some beef with that last vignette, which I figured would happen because of the title of the game. So as people who have been around long enough know, I have been studying folklore, myth, origins of different world faiths and stuff for like, you know, years off and on. And, you know, the last vignette, they pop up with some stuff about Wicca, which is real janky in a way that would probably really offend an actual Wiccan.
Right.
It basically takes the Book of Shadows or Grimoire that Wiccans use and transforms it into some kind of Necronomicon thing. Human skin with like a demon face on it. And apparently there's only one of them, and it's been passed down through the generations since medieval days when witches were burned in Europe. And okay, so like all Wiccans
it's like the
are
Bible,
black,
right?
Yeah, like, so all Wiccans are black magic users and have books with human skin with demon rituals. Okay, got it, right? Like, okay, that sucks. And more on a humorous note, though, a spell used from the book that, you know, they're using in the story is like this hours-long chant of nonsense words, which includes Wicca Wicca as part of the garble. She's like, blah, blah, blah,
like
blah,
it's a DJ remix.
Did Will Smith come in?
Yeah. And so, like, okay, actual Wiccans, at least the ones I know, write spells in their own native language, and they're not usually very long. most of the time they rhyme, so they have a certain cadence and can be used in meditative or trance state. So they're simple and easy to remember. They're not hours long, and they don't say Wicca Wicca in the middle of it. Like,
it's like the freestyle chant when you like don't know what your next verse is, and that's like the filler words that you say to get to the next verse.
Yes, and so anyway, that's just an aside. The persistent Wiccans are evil thing is really irritating, but otherwise the story bits set you up for a grand old time in Blood Drive, which I look forward to playing, although I took a break from Corpse Party just because I didn't want to overdo it.
Right.
So my overall feelings about this game. You probably shouldn't play it directly after the first installment, or you're going to feel tripped up by the flip-flop of the narrative style and pacing. So, Cole, whenever you play the first Corpse Party, give yourself a break before you do this one.
Yeah, build in a buffer. Gotcha.
Yeah, give yourself a break. It's got some good character development and backstory that fleshes out the world and the interpersonal dynamics, but think of it like omake, like EX chapters from the first game. It's like a bonus menu from the first title that got extended to something even longer than the first game is essentially how I think of this.
Oh.
So if you like the first Corpse Party, there's definitely stuff for you in this title. And it doesn't exactly fall flat so much as it just feels like it stumbles a little given their choices with the narrative and how to present it.
Yeah.
There's dissonance between one chapter to the next because the one is intense, dark, and creepy, and then the very next one is super cute and happy with just a few scary things going on. So I'd say you could play the first game and be fine without this one. If Blood Drive picks back up again, though, I may eventually have to recommend this one with a caveat. But right now, I do so more with like an asterisk and like a word of warning about what to expect going in. Like,
yeah, I'll be really curious if you start Blood Drive. I'm sorry to have talked over you there.
Oh, no.
I'm very curious if you start Blood Drive and you say like, oh, the way that they introduce this makes Book of Shadows completely optional, right? Because if you look at the way they've re-released these games, like Book of Shadows is the one that's hardest to get.
Yeah. And the thing is that because that the only direct connective tissue, like most of the rest of the game, except for the very last vignette, is just like filling in information about characters and situations and things for what already happened in the first game.
Right.
So the only thing that actually carries over directly, unless they start referencing, you know, some of the history that you get from Book of Shadows, like the only thing is that one last vignette that pushes the story forward just a little bit further.
Right.
But it's not like for being a sequel, it doesn't go forward very much. It kind of like wibbles and wobbles and goes back and forth between the past and the, you know, what happened in the first one. And then it just kind of like, you know, skips a little bit, you know, skips one step forward.
Yeah. It doesn't put down any new ink, but it just kind of shades.
Yeah. So, yeah, it really depends. When I get into Blood Drive, I'll be able to tell you if this is more like, you know, your optional story bits or if there's something that's really critical that they're revealing. Because it might be the case that they had to do this because they needed to tell you a bunch of little random bits of information that was not present in the first game. I mean, it's possible, but I'm not 100% until I play Blood Drive. You know, I won't know until I play the third game how impactful this second installment is to the series as a whole.
Right.
So we will see. Right now, I'd say is all right. It's not the greatest thing in the world. You know, it has some moments that are really good, but then, you know, overall, it's just like so janky in its presentation. It just kind of like jerks back and forth too much to have a real feel of consistency or build up. For me, anyway.
Yeah.
So that's Corpse Party, Book of Shadows.
I have a question. Do you think the game would have been better if it was called Corpse After Party?
Yes, because, you know, the Book of Shadows thing, I'm like, they're referencing Wicked stuff. There's going to be some shit in it.
It won't be the first time a video game has, like, really, really biffed the research. Yeah. Especially on, like, a religion. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, it reminds me of when I was playing Anna. Remember when I was doing that? And I was like, and then they had all these Wiccan symbols everywhere. What the hell with that? And I got mad.
I just thought it looked cool. Yeah.
I got mad at that too. But anyway, at least that game didn't like directly say that this was like, you know, this is what the Wiccans believe, kind of whatever nonsense, you know? Yeah. So anyway, enough about that. The last thing that I've been playing, guys, I actually went back to playing Persona 4 Golden. Remember how I dropped that like a bad habit a while back?
Yeah, like, you dropped that with a vengeance, and I was very curious when you mentioned you were going to pick it back up.
I was mad because I had to grind to get done with that boss. Okay, so for people who are just joining who missed the first time I was playing this game, I liked it all right. Like, there are systems about this game that I like. I stopped at the 8-bit dungeon, which I was told is about halfway through the game, and I stopped because I got to the boss and I had like gone through everything without having to go back and grind one bit. But this boss was like, you know, like Copper Demon kind of in Dark Souls, where it's like the thing people bounce off of and like, okay, now you have to do something to figure out how to get around this. So that sent me back to where I had to go back and grind through the dungeon to level everybody up to move forward. And so over the holidays, I took like 5 hours and ground the fuck out of my characters in the dungeons just to beat that boss.
Okay.
5 hours of my life grinding just to get past this stupid boss in this game. I was mad. So for some reason, that boss is a big difficulty spike. And then after that, like everything was cake. I have not had a problem since. And apparently, like the next boss I encounter is going to be just as bad. So,
oh, geez.
We'll see. So how that I made that tolerable is I looked through the Persona fusing system, because basically, for people who don't know what this game does, like you have your guy and you have a persona, which is like an alter ego type thing that you get power from that you can summon. It's kind of like Aeons or something. And you can summon them and they do magic stuff. And that's how you win fights. They have the magic, they have the special abilities and whatever. And your main guy is the only one who has more than one. I don't know why. And you get them and you can fuse them together to make new ones. So there's this whole crafting system essentially with the personas. And I decided that I was going to make the most complicated persona there was to make, that needed 6 different personas, like, you know, different specific personas in order to fuse into this one thing. And I decided that because I already had like 2 or 3 of them out of the 6. And I'm like, oh, I could probably do that. Since I have to grind anyway, it'll give me something other than levels to look forward to. And that's how I tolerated doing the grinding, because I was trying to fuse specific personas to make, you know, the trumpeter. And I did. So that's a thing. Now, I got through the rest of the summer because this game takes place during a year. Of you living in this little town. And I got through a lot of character interactions and got to know the final party member that I rescued. And so some notes about how it is going back into it, though. There's systems such as a daily choice of how to allocate your time into your social links with your party members and other people in town so you can fuse stronger personas. Into your own personal stats of, like, you know, diligence and courage and whatever, which enable you additional options in the role-playing segments.
Right.
And into grinding in the dungeons and so on. That stuff used to be really fun and interesting to me, but at the point that I got back into it, it started to sag because, you know, like, I was already pretty much filled out on my chart and, you know, like, I had pretty much been there, done that, and it wasn't as engaging to me anymore at that point.
Right.
However, like I said, the persona fusing system, which I used to not care about at all, became more interesting when I realized, you know, that I had all these persona that I could probably make the trumpeter and so on. So yeah. And probably because of, you know, having that interest in getting the personas to fuse, the dungeon was less annoying when I went through it. And I actually went through it after I beat the boss that I had a struggle with. I went through it another time, and I've been going back through the dungeons a second time, basically just to get personas to merge together at this point.
Right.
And I think the problem is that I think at this point, like, I've gone through 2 additional dungeons, and I'm on what I believe is supposed to be the last dungeon or the next to last dungeon, depending upon what ending I get.
Right.
And I'm at the point now where I've tapped out all of my reasons for grinding, and I've tapped out all of my interests in the town. There aren't any new personas that I'm excited about making anymore, and the town is not interesting anymore. So all I've got is I've got to finish the game.
Okay.
So I'm hoping that I have enough steam to do this because I am 66 hours in.
Right. So
hours. So Yeah, I have some gripes about some of the stuff that happened in the story, and unfortunately, I can't go into detail about it without spoiling. But and right. I know this is an old ass game, so like, it would not be bad for me to spoil it. But there were some choices made about two of the characters that made them much more, much flatter. And there's basically a big reveal after you finish the last character that you get in your party's dungeon. And it's the treatment of that really irks me. So I'll say it again that this game is weird because I'm not on board with like most of these characters. I thought Yosuke, which is like the first character that you get in your party, you know, along with your main dude.
Yeah.
I thought Yosuke was more interesting when he very obviously had a crush on the main guy, but then they backed off of that apparently due to the publisher's demands.
Oh man.
So he's fallen flat ever since. Like his bitchiness doesn't have like a point, yeah. You know? And I'm not a fujoshi, like a girl who's particularly a fan of yaoi or boy on boy romance, but like,
I liked how you forgot to switch gears for the pronunciation of romance.
Sorry. But despite, you, the main character, not having really a voice in the game, Yosuke really falling for him makes so much more sense given the situation that's around them at the start of the game that right. made me really mad when they backed off of it, because like it was just so it was presented so naturally and it made the most sense, and then they just said no, never mind. Yep. And then something very similar to that happens with the final character you get into your party. Mm-hmm. And it really just taps my hide. It makes me really, really mad because like this character would have been really, really awesome if they had just kept on going in the direction they were indicating, and then they stopped and they backed off of that, and then they just they said some not cool things.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I go between being amused and annoyed by Teddy, and I really like Kanji overall, but the game killed off what would have been love for another character, Naoto. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that it redeems itself, as I usually go for the serious and determined character.
Right.
And with some of the stuff you learn about him in his dungeon, you really think Naoto would be my favorite character, but it's not happening so far, even at the point where I'm at now.
Right.
Is it funny to say that the idea of a free form RP of Persona 4 Golden with a friend is more appealing of a concept for me than actually playing the game?
Can you define a free form RP?
So basically, like going back and forth, where you and one or a couple of other friends pick characters that you want to play primarily as, and somebody picks to be, you know, the person who directs the flow of the story and introduces, you know, like villains or whatever's going on, you know, like narrates the thrust of the overall, you know,
right, like game. like a Persona style, like a dungeon world kind of thing.
Yeah. And then like, you know, you build on it and you basically write the story together, but there's not rules for combat or things like that. You just kind of go with, you know, whatever the person who's in charge of the narrative is kind of indicating. You know, like you take cues from each other and how each person writes their reactions or actions.
Right.
You know, and that's how it plays out. And I think the reason why that's more interesting to me than the idea of actually playing this thing is because, like, they kind of back off of so many different things, and, you know, like with the characters and their interactions, that for a game that's about characters and their interactions, it just seems janky to me. Like, it feels ingenuine, and I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, so, like near misses hurt more than like obvious like whiffs, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing is that it really it feels like a near miss. Like they were going there, and then they just veered off to the side. And something that Matt or Squall or John or Sacred Agent Man, whatever you want to call him, though, was that this game happens to treat gender and sexuality as part of the characters in a manner that most games don't. Mm-hmm. And that they backed off of the directions that they started in, but the original game came out in 2008, which was a decade ago.
Right.
So, you know, he almost convinced me, and then I got to this beauty pageant section. The girl part actually was not the bad thing. The gross thing was when they were doing the cross-dressing pageant, and the commentary during that was ghastly. I was just like, This does not fly. This would not fly in 2008. This does not fly now. Like, this is, it does not matter if it was 2008. This still does not fly for that time period either. So, right. No, I thought back to 2008 and I'm like, okay, I went to Japan back then. Okay, yeah, I remember that time. You know, like, no, back then, no. So, anyway, like, the point is, I put all this time into this game. I'm still going. Mm-hmm. I am almost done. I had a several month break in there after about 40 hours, but I did pick it back up. See?
Yeah. That speaks. You picked it back up, and the way forward was, this is a game that contains so many multitudes that when you got bored of one thing, you could focus on the other thing and make that your engine, right?
That's pretty much what it was, is that, like, the reason why I could get back into this game is because it has a bunch of different systems for me to play with. And there are characters that I really like. Like, I like the Dojimas, which are the your uncle and then your cousin. And I like them a lot. And there are certain characters that I really enjoy. And then the characters that I got mad about them backing off of, like, I really like those characters and where they were going, except, you know, like, in my head canon, things are playing out differently than they are in the game. Let's put it that way. And so, yeah, like, even as a near miss and even making me mad, it's still enough that I've still wanted to see the end of it and finish playing it and see how they resolve it. And I'm really hoping that I don't throw my Vita at the end of the game.
No, I mean, I don't think they're making those anymore.
Yeah, no, so, like, please, Persona 4 Golden, please do not make me get mad and throw my Vita at a wall. I do not want to break it. I have games. I have backlog on that thing. I need to finish, please. So, I've enjoyed some things. I was glad that I finally got the ability to appreciate the Persona fusing system, because for a long time I was like, fuck that noise. You know, like, that's too complicated. I don't want to mess with it. And then that became, like, the only reason why I could deal with going back into the dungeon. So, you know, that's good.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that, the interactions in town and allocating your time to different tasks to level up different types of systems and manage everything, was interesting enough to carry me through a large chunk of the game, even though I never liked the dungeons. So...
yeah,
that's cool. But cool. So yeah, like, I want to finish it. I'm excited to finish it. I want to see what they do, and I'm hoping that I don't get mad at it anymore.
I've been told
the absolute nadir of this game was that beauty pageant, and I've suffered through that, and now from here, hopefully, it will only go up.
Blue skies ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that I have any questions about it.
Cool.
So, and is that all, Jella?
That's it.
Cool. Ben, I'm curious what you've been playing.
Ain't played shit. I've only been playing. I've just been playing old games. So I went through my Steam history. I've been playing, like, Rocket League and Magic, and I continue playing Human Fall Flat. That's a really great game, Jella. You might like that as a co-op game. That's, like, a whole lot of fun to play with other people. And I solved one puzzle of Opus Magnum, and I got a little bit farther in Evil Within 2, but not much. So
yeah. So
explain the thing that you said I would like. I don't know what it is.
Human Fall Flat. I think I talked about it last week, but it's the same engine as Gang Beasts, which I think Dennis talked, like, maybe a year or two ago about.
About that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so, like, it's just this, like, janky ragdoll engine. That you walk through, and your main control of the game is you can stick out your hands, and they're kind of like duct tape on the end of them, where whatever they touch first, then that's what you're either gripping or that's what you're attached to or whatever. So if you grab the ground, you're anchored to the ground. If you grab a wall, you're anchored to a wall. If you grab a person, you can lift them up and throw them off the edge of the map if you want. But there's, like, a bunch of physics puzzles that they made within the game. So, you know, like the typical, like, portal type puzzle where you pick up a box and put it on a thing and it'll open up a door. That is a way to get through the puzzle, or what you can do is you can just swing around the wall and then just climb around that way. So one of the things that's really good about it is for any given puzzle, there's, like, two or three ways to solve it that are, like, completely unique. So there's, like, a lot of fun. It rewards you for exploring the map, and that part's really nice.
Cool.
Yeah, it's fun to play. I have it. So if you want to play it, we can co-op it. Yeah.
Can you play it by yourself?
You can. All of the puzzles are made so that you can solve them with one person.
You're putting an awful lot of emphasis on can.
Yeah. I mean, I think the game is made to play with at least one other person, if not like a gaggle of people. But
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So just other than that, just a grab bag.
Yep.
Gotcha. Yeah, I have a grab bag as well, honestly.
What you got?
Yeah, so I've been playing Chaos Child, continuing doing that. Not an awful lot to say about a visual novel while you're still in the middle of playing it. Like, it's not really that interesting of a story to tell until it's told. However, most of my console play has been dominated by getting ready for a WoW stuff. And I've been playing some stuff on my Switch. Namely, two games that I put a little bit of time into are Enter the Gungeon and Mom Hid My Game.
Okay.
What?
Let's work backwards. What's Mom Hid My Game about?
Okay, so Mom Hid My Game, it is a very, not stripped down, but like they did not add an awful lot port of a series of iOS games called Hidden My Game by Mom. These games, they're like little one or two screen point and click adventure scenarios where you're playing as a small Japanese school kid and his mom has hid his DS and you have to find it. And this involves solving some very simple puzzles to find it. So like, let me see here. There's a, and they get incredibly elaborate as they go on, but like
I'm seeing one picture of a race with a goal and five urns with a snake tail coming out of one.
Yep. Right. Yeah, it's like, oh, you know, like over here are a bunch of urns and like one of these will have a, well, like if one of these will have your game, other ones will have snakes and one will have your mom inside. And what you're trying to do is avoid getting your kid hurt, and you're also trying to avoid alerting your mom. And that gets much more elaborate as well. So like sometimes like, as you're interacting, trying to find your game, you might click on a curtain, but maybe you didn't notice that there are some feet sticking out underneath it. And then, oh no, mama is what it says. And then she's there and, you know, she's angry and that's your failure condition.
Okay.
There'll be situations like, you know, there are a bunch of people like riding bicycles back and forth and you have to go in front of like an armoire kind of thing. If you try and go for the armoire, you get run over. So you have to go over one screen, search over there for a bunch of thumbtacks, throw the thumbtacks on the ground, and then all the bikers will crash, and then you can go get your stuff. And it gets even more elaborate from like from solving there.
Problems with murder, yeah,
exactly, murder situations.
this game looks a lot like the game Amy Adams works on in the movie Her.
I've not seen Her, but I would like to. but it is very, very simplistic. The drawings are like, you know, like obviously hand done line drawings of these characters. And, you know, sometimes they have, you know, sometimes your mom appears wearing a policeman's hat. Like if you pick up a wallet that's been laid out, like, oh, no, you stole it. Here's mom coming to arrest you kind of thing. And like the level of interactivity or play, like this was an iOS game, but it was very obviously like it very obviously could have been like a Newgrounds game on Flash. What makes it interesting is it does get incredibly creative with like the small little puzzles that it puts in front of you. And when I say little, each of these puzzles is, you know, you're going to solve like four or five of them on a go, like sitting down to play it for like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's incredibly breezy. That creativity also leads to like a lot of like funny gotcha moments, right? Like it is kind of a joy to play because it does throw a bunch of unexpected stuff at you, both in the failure and success conditions. Like, oh, wow, I didn't realize I could do that. Here you go, playing with the interface and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like I think you get them for free on iOS. It's like a $5 thing that rolls up a bunch of the old puzzles and adds the new ones on the Switch. I was happy to give this creator money. More so than they got for my ads the first time I played it. But yeah, it's called Mom Hid My Game. I would recommend, like, if you have mobile, go ahead and check those out. It's translated really weird on mobile. Like I said, it is Hidden My Game by Mom.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it's...
It brings me great joy in either case.
Yep. Yeah, any questions about Mom Hid My Game?
It looks pretty delightful.
Yeah. Delightful would be a good word for it. And I feel like the it has one song in it, and that's going to get stuck in your head, just like it is for me. You can't escape it.
As it plays in the background in your mind right now.
Yeah. I have a sore throat, so I can't do it. I shouldn't have even tried. Anyway, Enter the Gungeon. I have not played very much of this, but I've played enough to get a reckon on it. And I only bring this up now, Jala, because you're on here. Flipping tables is an important part of this game.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah, because sometimes you'll run into a room, there'll be a table. You press a button and then the character flips it up in the direction they were facing. Sometimes there's stuff beneath it, but the tables act as cover.
Mm-hmm.
Have you two heard of Enter the Gungeon before?
Yes.
I feel like somebody's talked about it on the podcast before, but I have not played it myself.
It might have been either, I mean, by process of elimination, it would have been either David or Dennis. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was David.
Yeah. And given his hate on for roguelikes, that is very funny. But this is a roguelike, like a top-down exploration roguelike kind of game in the vein of The Binding of Isaac. You know, randomly generated dungeons made up of these, you know, kind of like prefab rooms that are strapped together. But the emphasis is that everything is kind of like a bullet hell. So as you're going around, you can aim and shoot, and you know, you don't automatically shoot in the direction you push. You have to like manage your ammo and things, but like you have a dodge roll. So, you know, there will be an enemy, like boss enemies will just radiate these patterns of bullets that would be impossible for you to avoid just by doing some fancy footwork. So you have to know exactly when to dodge and where to dodge to, so you'll be safe in the next one. It is incredibly hard, but also incredibly rewarding, because, you know, it's been a while since I played a game that really, like, you know, depended on understanding your iframes, you know? Like, that's a huge thing in Dark Souls, and just not a lot of games that I find myself naturally playing do that. So, like, understanding and getting into a rhythm of, like, a bunch of flawless dodges is a very satisfying thing to do. And, yeah, you pick up different kinds of guns. Everything is gun-themed. So, like, your basic little enemies are little bullets that walk around with arms and legs. and it goes up from there. The icons for your health, instead of being a heart, it is two shotgun shells that are arranged like a heart.
Nice.
You know, like they're kind of crossed at one end. And yeah, like it is, they commit to the theme. It controls very well. It's kind of a natural fit for the Switch. Although I find myself, because of the precision, wanting to play it on the big screen with a pro controller, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it is relatively demanding of you, but it's pretty good, and I can see myself going into it a little bit more.
Do you know how long the game is?
No, I don't know how long it is.
So, Hidden My Game by Mom is free on iOS, by the way.
Okay, cool. That comports with my memory. I think the sequel is free as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of other roguelike kind of things, I downloaded Crypt of the Necrodancer for iOS, thinking that would play really well on iPad. It kind of doesn't. Like, it just kind of a bummer. Like, oh, I thought the swiping would be better. Strangely enough, though, I fired up my Apple TV shortly after I did that. I like to watch some YouTube before bed. And then I saw, oh, there's an icon for Crypt of the Necrodancer. Oh, I got the Apple TV version, too. And that remote on the Apple TV is garbage and good for nothing, apparently, except for playing this game. Because, like, you move around by swiping up and down on that little touchpad, and you know, execute commands by pressing down on it. It actually really works and is comfortable. So I was quite surprised by that turn of events. Crypt of the Necrodancer. You know, probably not that great on iOS. Apple TV, a real surprise.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah. And that's all.
Cool.
Well, it's a shorter episode, but you know, sometimes that happens. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. I hope your first 2 weeks of the new year have gone well. If you want to help out the show, tell friends. Say, hey, I know these nice people who talk about video games. You like podcasts, or you like video games, or you like both, you know, that's your sales pitch. That's kind of the only way that we can grow is by word of mouth. And you all have killed it in the past. You're killing it now, and let's continue killing it.
We want to katamari this shit.
Yeah. Roll up the stars. I don't know if there are headphones big enough for the stars or if they could get close enough. Also patreon.com/duckfeedtv is a good way to support the network as a whole. And I think that's everything. The show is short. Admin can be short too. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch me stream at DuckFeedTV.
I'm Jala Prendez, and I'm Jala-chan in places.
I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelBee on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one. I'll just throw it out here. CPR VR.
I only have two. CPR VR and Alpha Cole.
Oh, jeez.
I only have three. I have CPR VR, Duck Pals, and Mark Time by My Size.
What?
It's a homophone, but it's a size as in like.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Yeah.
That's why I wrote it down too, because I liked that it had a double meaning.
I think CPR VR gets it.
Yeah,
by votes. Cool. All right, well, I'm gonna follow Jala's cue, and I'm gonna go to bed because I'm very tired.
I gotta go take a shower first, but I gotta go to sleep too. I got stuff to do.
Yeah, long day at work tomorrow.
Yeah, 5 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Yeah, that's a lot. That is a great deal. Cool. Well, take care, you two.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Have a good week.
You too. Bye.